Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living and Power Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day, a good week, a good month, a good life. Well, you know, all the good stuff. How's that? Wrap it all up in one nice big good ball of fun. I really, really am looking forward to talking with my guest today, Rosalind Byrne, because she had an epiphany and one of these transcendent experiences that you don't expect that happens as life is just going merrily along, and all of a sudden you realize there's this other thing that happens, and it's probably been happening all along, and you just now got a glimpse and kind of tumble into it like Alice in Wonderland. And what happened was, you know what? It's better if she tells you. Hi, Rosalind. How are you?
Hi, Wendy. I'm well.
And I know you can tell all about this story very eloquently. I've seen the TED Talk. And I've listened to your stuff on YouTube. So I was like, oh, this is such a great story, because this is a lot of times how this starts for people. First, the books and things like that we'll get into in just a minute. But she talks to horses and horses talk to her. And this is animal communication. But everybody has their own way of explaining this. So this had to be an amazing thing when you realized what was happening. So can you kind of set it up a little bit?
Well, yeah, and you would think so, but Wendy, it was like the most natural thing in the world. So here's what happened. I was in Costa Rica working on a novel and sequestered in a cabin for days and thought I should just get out, get some fresh air. And so I signed up for a trail ride, and we were on these horses going over beautiful mountainous ranges and valleys. And we crossed a river Aranal, and I fell off of my horse. And I can still remember the water rushing over my head, but it was not that deep, so I could stand up, and I was fine. And I got back up on the horse, and lo and behold, if I didn't hear him speaking, and he was very upset, and he was saying things like, no one's ever fallen off of me before. It's my job to keep the people on my back safe. Am I going to be in trouble? What's going to happen now? Did you get hurt? How did this happen? He was very upset. And I heard him, you know, not sort of audibly from sound coming into my ear, but inside my own inner ear or brain. I don't know where it sets up when you hear in that way. So we started having a conversation. I said, his name was Titan. Titan, I'm fine. Don't worry. Please don't worry. Everything's okay. I'm not hurt at all. It's all my fault. You didn't do anything. And then at that point, we could see the barn, and we were almost finished with the ride. And he said, you can actually hear me, can't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, then I need for you to do something for me. I need for you to tell my owner, and her name was Debbie, and I had not really met her until that day, tell my owner that she's wrong. I don't need any more training. So I dismounted the horse. I waited for the other tourists to go away because I didn't know how other people would react to what I was about to say. And I met Debbie in the tack room, and I shared with her what Titan had said, and she gave me sort of a funny look. But I just went on about my business and went back to my cabin, took a shower, and got ready for dinner, and came down to dinner, and she came up to me, this Debbie person, very quietly, and she whispered, how do you know that? And I said, how do I know what? What you told me about Titan. I need to know how you know, because for the last week, the stableman and I have been talking about how we need to send Titan back for training. That's where it began.
And Titan's went, no, 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 no. Okay, well, all right. So let's get back into, we're going to pick that up in just a minute. But your background, you were writing, but what brought you to that point?
Oh, my goodness. So I teach in a school of engineering, undergraduates, but I'm trained in the humanities and bioethics. So what I teach is courses on ethics and technology in the future. And I had been really consumed with some research I was doing about nanotechnology in the future, and ended up writing a science fiction novel to look at some of the issues that I think are coming along for us. So that's what I was up to. You know, I research about technology, and I write about it in fiction and nonfiction. And this certainly did draw a line between that life and a new life that's trying to emerge for me. That's for sure.
Absolutely. You know, because this is in most areas, these are complete opposites.
Mm. Tell me about it. And and when I decided that, so I didn't know what to do with this. I didn't know what to do with the experience. I came on home, I had been there by myself. You know, I was there actually, in addition to writing, I was sort of processing the end of a 30-year marriage and dealing with some personal things and just sort of getting it together. And I came back and I thought, you know, what in the world do I do with this? And so I went into a meditation about it, sort of prayer meditation, and asked the universe, what is this? What do I do? That very day, the answer came. It was incredible. I was traveling to Texas for a conference, and I was changing planes in Atlanta. You have to go down these escalators to go underneath and get these sort of trains from one concourse to the other. I'm going down the escalator, and I'm looking to my right to see if the train has come in. And it's like a pressure against my cheek pushing my head to the left. And just when my head turned to the left, there's this poster mounted on the wall, and it said, "Be the voice for those who cannot speak."
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to write. I'm supposed to speak for the horses. So I went back to Costa Rica. I met a number of horses there and a horse here in Virginia where I live. And I wrote up everything those horses were telling me. And then I found a publisher, which is not easy to do. I'll have to say that. And the publisher would not allow me to use a pseudonym. He said, "I will only publish this under your name because you have a reputation already in the world of technology studies. And people respect you as a scholar. And I need to trade on that good name. If you make up a name, they're going to see you as just another kook who thinks she talks to horses."
Right.
And so I went to my department chair and I said, "I'm in a quandary. I don't know what to do." And he was amazing. He was amazing. He could have said, "Oh, no, you can't take that risk." But instead, he asked me if my heart was in this work. And I said, "It's in this work more deeply than anything I've ever written." And he said, "Well, then you have no choice." So we published it. And indeed, some people don't know quite what to do with me as a scholar now. But I'll tell you, my students are really intrigued. And they're of a different generation, right? Just a different generation, very open and pretty excited and very supportive. It's the other old fart colleagues that I hang out with that are not so sure, some. And others, amazing. Others, amazingly, are open. Like I have about 20 clients now who hire me to come help translate for their horses. And one wrote to me, turns out she is an engineer who teaches in an engineering university in Virginia. I'm like, wow, a mechanical engineer is writing to me and asking for my help. And she showed up and we're working together. And now she's thinking we should collaborate. It's like, wait, maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance for me to stay in this world and share this knowledge. But I don't know. I don't know, Wendy. I hope so.
Oh, of course. Of course. That's the beauty of this. And I'm looking at your book, Waking to Beauty. There's so much going on. I think we limit ourselves when we just want to be a specialist in one category. And then you fell into this discovering that you had this natural ability, this connection that was just there. And it didn't pop out until this experience with the horse happened. And then all of a sudden it's like, and you said, well, it was as natural as anything. But until that moment, you were studying and quite accomplished in other areas. And so you had honed some wonderful skills. And especially when you're talking about the area of nanotechnology, I think, and bioethics and all of that, I think those things actually work hand in hand. I do believe that there's a whole lot more to our technology, artificial intelligence, that involves a lot more, shall I say, sentience, that when you start putting these elements together, they also have a belief, a mind, an element that is just as aware as us. Maybe we don't recognize it on the same level, but it's there. And we're getting into areas that we can't possibly know the outcome until these things, pretty much like you had the experience, fall on our heads or knock us for a loop. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, this is real. And those of us who are open-minded are willing to say, I don't care that it doesn't fit in the norm. Something's happening and I want to know more. So it's your experience to share this and come from this wonderfully linear background. I call it linear because everything adds up in that world of engineering. Intuition, it doesn't.
Do remember, though, that I am like a traveler in that world, right? I as I tell some of my friends, it feels like I'm going to a foreign country every time I go to work, because there's a different language. There's even a different way of thinking, a different way of dressing for many people. And I come from, again, a humanities background. However, I am immersed in that world and adapted to that world and trying to understand how people who see the world in that way make sense of things. But, you know, engineering pushes the edge very much, and particularly a lot of the new sciences pushes the edge of our understanding. And this shows up in our literature and our films. Like, for example, there's so many films, like the film Her, for example, which where you know, something that's essentially code becomes conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And the film The Matrix, where, you know, indeed the Matrix is conscious and aware.
Mm-hmm.
And so people talk about the Earth Matrix, and the technological matrix that's now emerged and reshaping our brains in profound ways. I feel like, you know, Titan's talking to me anchored me more deeply in the Earth Matrix. And that's why it felt so natural. I think that that is our birthright. I think that's who we are as human beings, but that we are on the cusp of another kind of living, another kind of consciousness that is taken up in this more technological matrix, and we're trying to navigate those worlds, and some of us have moved quite far over to one side from the other. I think it's going to be important to remember our connection, our Earth connection, and our connection to the other living beings on the Earth in order to really stay healthy as we sort of move into this other world. That's my claim.
Oh, and I think at this point, I don't know. It's like a fantastic journey. This is beyond dreaming, because we're watching things change so fast and evolve so quickly that when you're talking, I mean, 10 or 15 years ago, I could talk to maybe one or two people about these experiences as realities. Now there are books, there are communities, people are learning from each other. I have a guy who shoes horses. I think he contacted me about 5 years ago, and he wanted more help. And so he asked somebody who could do that, you know, listen or hear or get another vantage point. And so I helped him and suggested certain things. And he was like, thank goodness. And I said, but you're already doing this, because he had his own barometer and he had this sense with the animals he worked with. He knew it, he just didn't trust it, and he had no other resources, nobody else to talk to. Well, now he's developed more of this, and he's much more comfortable. He doesn't call me every, you know, 3 or 4 months. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, I got this problem.
Yeah.
But this is something that as each of us learns and experiments and allows it to evolve, the whole, the collective is learning and expressing and expanding. And that's so fantastic. So that's why when I saw that your background was engineering and nanotechnology, I'm like, oh yeah, this is not science fiction. This is science fact. These things are happening now. And just because something is perceived by us to be a metal equipment, piece, computer, whatever, when you have experiences that your technology responds to you in an overt and obvious way, it blows your mind.
Mm.
Something is happening.
Mm. Mm. Well, here we are in this rapidly changing world of ours, trying to navigate. And it's a little dizzying sometimes. However, I have to say, when I'm listening to horses, I feel more grounded and comfortable than, really, for me, than sitting in front of my computer, where I feel sometimes disoriented because things are moving so quickly. Information is coming at me so quickly. You know, I'm getting 60 and 70 emails a day and trying to figure out what to do with my inbox and my saved files. And it's overwhelming sometimes. And when I go and I just stand next to a horse and I simply breathe with that horse, it's very soothing. It's very grounding. And I remember, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the way I can actually feel. And I can feel my body and I can feel my heart. And things get very, vivid and yet mm-hmm. quiet at the same time.
Okay, so when you're talking to horses, mm-hmm. when you first got into this, the one when horses whisper, mm-hmm. what was your experience I guess, what was the most profound, in terms of an overview, insight that you took away from this?
Oh, gosh. And some of this I do describe in Waking to Beauty, which focuses on conversations with two particular horses, a mare and a stallion. One thing I realized is horses are very much like human beings. There's a variety in terms of consciousness and evolution of wisdom. So where some horses want to talk about what they're being fed and or something that gives them pain, other horses are talking about broken relationships because they've been sold and moved, bought and traded, and they are longing for very dear friends or offspring that they were separated from. And then way out to the farther end, you have a few horses and unusual horses that I would consider to be wise beings that are reflecting on the status of humanity and trying to help us. It's quite extraordinary.
When you're talking about the wise beings, have they told you, do they have that awareness of incarnating for a specific purpose?
Yes. Yes. In fact, what I'm learning, particularly from this mare named Beauty, is that there was a choice made to incarnate in order to be of support to human beings. It's been sort of a sacrifice. And so because of horses, look what we've been able to accomplish and how we've been able to survive, in fact, because of horses. So they took us into terrains that were not navigable without them. They helped us plow, you know, and do labor. They went to war with us. Now that we are more using them as commodities, for the most part, entertainment, there's a sense among some of them that they're looking for another purpose and another kind of relationship, and that it's going to change because their choice about being here in this way is changing.
Now, does that mean, do they talk about where they go after this particular, after this incarnation, this job, this duty?
This is not anything I've heard about yet. Beauty in particular is more worried about humanity than she is about the horse kingdom. She's not sure that we're going to be able to maintain because she said the earth is making adjustments to bring balance back, and that may involve a lot of suffering in terms of human beings unless we change with it. So that's what I'm hearing more from Beauty and less about the horses themselves. But I do get the feeling that and maybe other animals as well, but they allowed us to domesticate them where other mammals did not. And this was in part a choice on their part because they were here to support our development and our growth. That is definitely changing.
Okay. Yeah. And in terms of that, when you're working with people who, because you say they're all across the board, when the ones who are, or a sense that they aren't valued or given the opportunity to participate at the level they want, what do they do with that frustration?
Some get depressed, actually, just like human beings, and they check out. I don't know if you've ever experienced a trail ride where it's like the horses were, their souls were just not there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So they're just not accessible. You know, they're sort of just checked out. And I've met horses that are in post-traumatic stress disorder because they've been sent to these warehouses to be sold for slaughter and then rescued from them, and they're just shaken, really shaken. So like us, they can experience trauma and psychological illness. I've met a horse who I think literally had lost its mind. Mm-hmm. And so then I have met horses who are deeply connected to their people and very serious about their work, especially horses that work as therapeutic horses with.
Yes. Yeah.
They are really committed and very satisfied and fulfilled in their work, just like we would be when we feel that we're valued and seen and when our gifts are being brought to bear. They are incredibly loving, heart-centered beings when they're healthy, when they're not depressed, when they're not anxious. Some of them are really quite competitive, you know, and they're perfectly happy to be raced and used that way. However, we don't tend to treat them very well in the long run. Right? And so it's about mutual respect and appreciation when they do sacrifice for us. So I would say it's not uniform, Wendy. It's more, it depends on the horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So with your abilities. Do you see yourself stepping in? I mean, I know we at the very beginning you said you were a little bit unsure, but at this point, what do you see as a next step?
Right. Well, so I had thought for a while these books would be my way of getting the message out there. And Horses said to me, please keep telling people. It's really important that people understand that we are hearing them. We understand. We're aware. We can communicate. And so I really want to keep getting that message out there. So that's why I'm so grateful for opportunities like your radio show. Give more people a chance. And then I have this sort of very brief video that was meant to be a trailer, which I finally just put out there and boosted and sent it around the world because it gives the same message. One possibility, and I'm talking with my publisher about, is to crowdfund and raise money in order to do a series, a mini docu-series that we would post that would bring the camera in to observe some of the encounters that I have with these horses to get the message out that way. I am working on a third book in this trilogy based on a horse I've just adopted named Raven, who's already teaching me a great deal.
Okay, quick. Did you already have horses to start out with, or is this part
no,
of this?
No, I've never had a horse in my life, and that's another story maybe you'll want to ask me about.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah. And the third thing is I may, if I can find the time, because I do have this full-time day job, I may also offer some workshops to bring people in, because horses can help us to deepen our sensing and our awareness and our mindful state. And I may be able to come up with a way to help people do that in the presence of horses.
See, now I'm going to vote on that, because one of the groups that I really wanted to get involved with this is, and it's so funny because then I was looking for, okay, now who can I have that can speak to them? This is how this synchronicity works. I wanted a therapeutic riding center, something working with therapeutic horses. And so I found one in Kansas City, New Horizons, and that's what they do. They work with all ages, and the horses are part of it. And I thought, well, I need somebody who really does speak to this. And I've had horse information, horse background all my life. Yeah. But then all of a sudden, I got a newsletter with your name and your contact information. And I responded. He said, oh, no, we're not representing her. I just put it in the newsletter. Yeah. I'm like, slam dunk. So I'm going to put in, since we're talking and we're talking about your future, the Heartland right here in Kansas City, there is an organization that would be perfect as one of your training video learning opportunities. So just put that in your little bonnet.
Okay. It's there. My blue bonnet.
Bookmark it.
It's there.
Yeah. Because it's just... these kinds of things are happening as we live our lives and we make our connections. And this is the kind of stuff that I put that thought out there. And I thought, okay, as I do this show, I want to benefit some organizations. This was one of them. All right, we're going to come back and find out. This is your first horse. That's awesome. Okay, so we have to take a break. But again, if you're listening, the books, you can check them out. There are several to choose from. Waking to Beauty. That's the one she was mentioning about the couple of horses. And the other one, the stuff I saw was When the Horses Whisper. But if you want to get into some of this nanotechnology stuff, she's got a book on nanotalk that's fascinating as well. All right, so there we go. You go onto the website, Rosalyn Byrne, and just do a Google. You'll find it.com, and you'll find out more. We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes here, but I'm going to spell the name because just in case, RosalynBerne.com. And while you're doing that, do a Google search and find the videos too, because the one you talked about that you thought would be helpful, I think that, yeah, I like that just as much as a TED Talk or even more, because it's concise. It gets your point across, and it brings that enthusiasm, that sense of, oh, there's so much more here. There's so much more here. And you're a wonderful vehicle for the horses to get their message across. So I'm really thrilled about that. So anyway, in terms of the name of the horse, before we get into the next break, the one you're working with right now?
My adoptee, her name is Raven.
Oh, perfect. Is Raven on the book?
Not yet. She just came into my life 2 months ago.
Oh, good. So this is all new.
Brand new.
This is all new. Okay. All right. So if you're listening now, remember, we're going to be doing this, another interview with this in Kansas City, live, Talk Radio KCMO. And if I can talk Rosalyn into it, Okay, fine. Yeah. I'll keep talking. All right. We'll see what she does. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. This is Conscious Living and Power Radio. Check us out on the podcast. And remember, I've got the new show coming up on Talk Radio KCMO in Kansas City. And we're covering similar contents with a few more commercials and news because it's radio and they interrupt for commercials and news because that's how they pay the bills. With podcasts, we just go by the grace of the guy upstairs. And somehow it all works out. So my guest today, Rosalind Byrne, a fantastic opportunity to connect with other beings here that have a lot to share and a lot to say. So stick around. We'll be back with more of her story here on Conscious Living and Power Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there. I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi. I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I hear my guest, Rosalind Byrne. The books, well, rosalindbyrne.com, you can check that out, find out more about her information and background. The books, Walking to Beauty, Creating Life from Life. This is the biotechnology and science fiction book we were talking about earlier, I think. Is that right, the one you were talking?
So Creating Life from Life is different than the nanotechnology book. This one I invited about 9 scientists to write about their research, and then I and other science fiction writers wrote companion pieces to sort of elucidate that research and what it could mean in the future. Slightly different book. That one and Nanotalk are both academic presses and sort of hardback and mostly meant for libraries and institutions because they're priced at that rate as opposed to the trade books about the horses and the sci-fi.
Okay, but I love the content because it's for... for thinking and for getting people into the world of science as it is now and where it's going in the future. There's so much to learn from these kinds of conversations. And,
yes, absolutely. In the first book, I interviewed 35 scientists over the course of 5 years about their research in nanotechnology. That was a fascinating project. And as a scholar, it was really fulfilling because I was having these relationships going deeper and deeper over the course of 5 years, and we were having really very fascinating discussions about the ethical implications of their work and the societal implications of their research.
Okay, now the other one, Waiting in Silence. This is, let me read the little background on this. Praise is due for this debut novel set in post-apocalyptic Nantucket in the USA. The complexity is dynamic between nano-enhanced humans who have access to universal knowledge and the independents whose access is limited. This kind of sparks a whole like, okie doke, you kind of know what you're getting into. Was this what you were writing down there?
It was. It's what I went to finish. And that book happened because I was asleep in a hotel in New York City during a visit with some scientists there. And I awoke in the middle of the night, or maybe 1 in the morning. Went to sleep early, 1 in the morning. I woke up wide awake. I'm like, what am I doing awake? And not being a TV writer, a watcher, and I didn't really have anything with me to read. There was no Kindles back then. I thought, what am I supposed to do with myself? And I picked up a pad of paper, and I just started writing, and I wrote until dawn. And then I stuffed that pad of paper in my briefcase and ran off. And months later, I pulled it out, and I read it. And lo and behold, it was a short story set on Nantucket, and a woman was hiding in the silence of an old Quaker meeting house, pregnant, and hiding from the authorities that wanted to intervene in her pregnancy and in utero, go in and manipulate the child. And so that's where it started. And then my brother-in-law, who's a filmmaker, said, you've got to write this up. This is a novel. And it took a few years, but I did. I did.
Yeah, well.
It was great. And I think a lot of it was subconscious stuff or maybe collective unconscious stuff coming up, you know, because I wasn't planning to write a novel, but once it started, the characters were talking and the story unfolded. And it was an incredible experience, actually.
Okay. I like this. This is a good tease too. At the end, the person who wrote the background for this, and the ending is a delightful surprise. Okay, fine.
And I'm not telling you what it is.
Well, okay,
it
wouldn't be a surprise.
First.
You know, people who read the back of the book first. Okay, what's the surprise? What's the surprise?
Well, it's actually not a surprise in my definition. Some people are angry with me about the ending.
Ooh, okay. See, there's drama right there.
There's drama. There we go.
And suspense and mystery all in one nice tidy package. Okay, so that, if you're listening, Waiting in Silence is, which is really perfect for this show. Waiting in Silence is the topic, the author, the name, the whole, and it just, I don't know. I think it pulls all of these elements into play of what we're looking at as a potential for our future when we want to change things that before we weren't able to have any impact on. There's no intervention in trying to make a child smarter or dumber or, you know, or change the hair color and all that. And right now there's a whole lot of controversy over just how far we can go with genetic manipulation.
Oh, absolutely. And we are probably on the cusp of another technological revolution like we were a couple hundred years ago when we were discovering about electricity and magnetism and gravity and the intersection of those. I mean, and that's sort of the time when Mary Shelley was writing Frankenstein, because all this new knowledge was pouring in and questions about, you know, how these things work together and what animates life, what brings forth life. And we're right back there, but in a very different way, with much, much more sophistication about how to actually manipulate life at that genetic level.
What do you, in terms of the nanotechnology that's available now and the ethics that comes into this, do you see people who are really concerned about the possibility that we can basically create artificial humans, and that could backfire if we don't give them some form of maybe compassion, empathy, something that drives them not to want to be as destructive as we are?
Well, the actual science spans nano, biotechnology, other forms of knowledge. Nano really only is about the scale, how small you work. So people at that were working at that scale in the biological sciences and other sciences as well, material sciences. So nano is what enables us to have more control because we can work at that very, 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 very tiny, tiny scale of matter. So that being said, this fantasy bordering on potential reality of bringing forth new forms of life, sure, people have been worried about that for a while when we started manipulating genes for genetic engineering of plants in our food. And now we're able to do it more with other kinds of animals, insects particularly, like that carry certain kinds of viruses and diseases, turning, removing and changing the genetic structure to try to alter that. And that's sort of the very, very beginning that leads people to be a little bit concerned, where is this taking us? What does this mean for what we do to human beings? And in fact, it's true with in vitro fertilization, because we have access to the embryo before it's implanted, we can test it, we can make choices about it, we can choose eye color now, we can certainly choose the sex of the child now. It probably is just a matter of time before we make selections that remove certain kinds of illnesses, like the gene for Tay-Sachs disease, et cetera. But mm-hmm. The movie Gattaca looked at this 15, 20 years ago, you know, at the point when we're able to actually be very specific about what we want in our offspring. As to whether we create new life, I don't know. I don't think we really know enough about life or what it is to be able to do that, but we certainly are learning a lot about how to manipulate the life that's in front of us in the forms of various species, plants, insects, animals, and us.
And us. I want to get back into your horse, the very first horse that you've ever had. Raven.
Oh, my. Okay, so here's what happened. One of my clients had adopted a horse from a facility near Richmond, Virginia. And the facility found out about me through that client and asked if maybe I could come and help them, because they had a horse there who was not responding to their care. And they wondered if I could talk to her to figure out what she needs and what was going on. So this client, as a gift to them, hired me, took me there. And while there, I was working with that horse, Ruby. And then I thought, well, I'm here. I could check in with the others. And I was standing facing a mare named Rain. And I started laughing because Rain was saying they're going to have a hard time placing me. And then I told the group that, and they said, well, that's interesting because she's already been adopted 3 times and come back. So I was like, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And and so while I'm talking to Rain, up behind me comes this gorgeous black mare with 3 white socks, gorgeous black mare. And she's standing right behind me so that her neck is to my left, and then, you know, her withers and back is to my right. And she's starting to talk. And it's a little distracting because I'm still trying to talk to Rain. And I hear her say, I'm the horse you need. I'm the horse you've been waiting for. I will help
you deepen your work. Take me home. Like, whoa. And I turned around and I said, Raven, I heard you. And I went back to working with Ruby. And then later, Raven exhibited some really unusual qualities. We were standing in sort of a semicircle as I was talking to her. And she went up to each person, each of the volunteers, myself mm-hmm. and my client, and greeted each of us, like standing right in front of us and then putting her nose against us and walking to the next person. And they said, we've never seen anything like this before. And she was showing me that she has a healing. She's a healer, and she's mm-hmm. very tuned in. And then I thought, oh, my goodness, this is the horse I've been waiting for. But now I live in the middle of the city, not a big city. I live in the city in a house that, you know, where the houses are very close together, lovely neighborhood, but, you know, we don't have any land. I'm thinking, what do I do? But I could not get her out of my heart. I could not stop thinking about her. It's like when you fall in love and you can't stop thinking about that person.
Yeah.
So 3 days later, I wrote to another client who has a boarding facility, and I said, okay, what's involved? What does it cost? And she said, I'll do anything to support your work. You can board her here. So I went back, and I got Raven, and Raven's being boarded. Now, of course, what happens next? I realize I miss her. I can't just see her once a week. I need to live with her. So our house is on the market, and we have bought a horse farm, which we're moving to in about a month.
A horse farm.
Meanwhile, I get a note from this rescue facility, VEWS, Virginia Equine Welfare Society, and they ask me, is there any way you can take Ruby, the one I was first asked to come? And I said, okay, I need to come and see her. And I went to see Ruby, and she's different than Raven, but she needs a home. And I felt that I could make that possible for her, because why? We're buying a horse farm.
Yeah, I know. It's a horse farm. That usually implies plural.
Well, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no experience with horses, but all the help I needed is just showing up. People are saying, you know, a trainer is saying, I won't charge you. Just barter with me. I'll help you. Yeah. And I'll help you go get her. And somebody called and said, you know, I have a trailer and a truck I'm selling really cheap. And plus another horse, a gelding that needs a place, no charge if you want him. It's like, oh, okay, universe. What the heck? What is going on? Yeah.
When it rains.
It's like, okay. I mean, I say yes. I always say yes because I want the, you know, divine will, greatest good, whatever. I want that. If I can be part of it, I'm going to say yes. But I just need to know that I have support because I'm not really, I mean, my goodness, I'm going to get up every morning. I'm going to muck some stalls and I'm going to,
yeah.
And then I'm going to go to bed at night and bring out the grain and check on them. This is not a life I know, Wendy. But
you're going to love it. You're going to love it. I mean, for one thing, it's opening you to an entirely new perspective and a new chapter in your life.
Yes. Well, did I mention that I'm going to be 60 in a year? A new chapter, huh?
Well, yeah, the but this is the youth. This is joy. This is the fun, the spark. And you've got company, all these little beings who are saying, finally, you got here. You graduated. You're ready for us now.
Oh, it feels like that, really. It does feel like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know that they don't talk to you for no reason and they don't choose you for no reason. They know that there are other things happening and you are ready. So that's the beauty of this. You are absolutely ready.
It's a bit of a mystery what's unfolding before me, but I am saying yes. I'm saying yes.
Okay. So the family around you, the people that you know, are they just, I guess, because this would be an incredible transition. Are they blown away by the steps that you're taking?
So I ended a 30-year marriage about 6 years ago and remarried 2 years ago. And the man I married is, it's almost as if he's here in part because he's exactly who I need to support this next chapter in my life. It's quite amazing. It's quite amazing.
Has he had horses before?
He's the one that found the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one that encourages me. He's like a muse. He points me in this direction, and it's just what I needed to see, a poem about a horse or some information. And he's reading all these books about how to have a horse farm and what to do along with me.
Uh-huh.
And it's become a true partnership.
A co-creating. Yeah.
Yeah. Now he thinks he needs a horse that's his too, so it's quite something. And then my daughter is so taken with Raven. She loves Raven. And so we go to visit her together and we groom her together. And my son, who I'm going to use the language of, is in recovery from a pretty harsh 8-year journey through bipolar and schizoaffective. I'm going to say he is in recovery. And he came to visit Raven for the first time. And I could sense that she was right there working with him, supporting him in this recovery process.
Mm-hmm. They are so tuned in. And when you were talking about the horse going around and acknowledging each person, there was a transition recently. This was a dog, wonderful, wonderful dog. But we were there and this is the going away goodbye moment. And before she went to the office, the clinic, and she came up to each of us and thanked us for being there and being a support system for her caregiver. And when they make those connections, they know what they're doing and they know where they're going. And it's such a gift to be present and to be part of this whole community, this way of engaging the world. And I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. And breaking from your routine and your former label identity, and at the same time doing it out loud, not being not going with a pseudonym, because it just adds so much more integrity, so much more depth, so much more authenticity and credibility to say, this is who I am, every single part, and I am out loud, I'm open, and that means others can have that same awareness and that same wonderful embracing of their own identity without having to feel they need to hide something because it's unnatural. This is natural. I love the way you said that at the beginning, but no, it was natural. It wasn't, it was natural. And I'm like, ah, yay. We're at an amazing point in our reality right now, in my opinion.
It's very encouraging the way you say that. And I, the benefit of being at my age is that I don't have time to hide anymore. I just don't. And I feel like I am fulfilling some part of my soul's contract in being here by saying yes to this and stepping out. I am still a scholar, and so I'm still interested in, you know, asking questions and researching to find answers. But I have a different toolbox now, and maybe it will broaden it, and maybe I can incorporate it all into one. We'll see what unfolds. But if I can, by being this way and open, and I am speaking quite openly with my students and colleagues and community members, if this gives people a sense of security about feeling their way into their own natural gifts for connection and communication, then that's enough all by itself. But if there's more for me to do in places like Kansas City, or next week I'm actually going to be in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm going to be introduced to the director of a rescue facility there and to some trainers who are in that industrial, horse industrial world. If I can be there in a way that helps them to see and feel differently or to hear differently, then that would be very fulfilling work for me, Wendy.
Well, it certainly is an unconventional way of getting into this kind of work, because you're going in a whole new direction that I think is beginning to become more valued and validated with every person who successfully makes a connection between a horse and their caregiver. When you hit the nail on the head and say, like you did in Costa Rica, when the horse said, please tell, give a message, because you hear me and I need you to give somebody a message. That is so incredibly powerful. There are no words to say what a gift and what a nice, generous, kind thing you did, a compassionate thing for the horse. Without discounting it, you said, well, okay, I'll give the message. And there are so many more horses and people who need those connections.
You know, the rest of his request, he said, I don't need any more training. What I need is to be able to have a break now and then, but I know exactly what my job is and what I need to do. And the good news about that is that Debbie, his caregiver, acknowledged that they've been working really, really hard and that it would be good for them to have breaks occasionally. And so it was a sort of an opportunity for her then to tune in more with these horses who work so hard every day, trail riding and therapeutic. But the other thing I want to point out is you used the term caregiver. I no longer use the word owner, although I said it when I was telling the story. That's how I heard it at the time. But having now observed for these last 5-6 years, these relationships between horses and their people, I realized that the owner is, it's the wrong language now. It's sort of like when we used to refer to people being owned by other people. I'm hoping that we're going to get past that. And that we're going to, like we did with the ownership of other people, begin to see our animals quite differently, as companions that are in mutually respectable relationships, and mutual support, mutual love and care.
I think that's a transition that's underway. And I mean, I've worked to change my language, too, as I see this, because I know with my own pets, when they, you know, it's like, I am the mom, or I am the companion. I'm not the owner. It just doesn't work that way.
Now, the tough thing, good. I'm glad to hear that. And I think you're right. We certainly are in transition in a big way. Now, the one thing that's tougher with the horse industry. Generally speaking, when you take on a dog or a cat, most people keep that animal for life, unless that they can't handle it, right?
Yeah.
Horses are a commodity for many people. They are bought and sold and traded at will when it doesn't work out. So say you buy a horse because you want to do the hunt, and then the horse isn't doing quite the work you had hoped, so you just sell that horse and get a different one that's a better fit for the hunt or for the barrel racing or for whatever purpose, you know. And what happens is, it might seem like it's working for the person, but horses, they bond for life, and they make very, very deep friendships with other horses as well as with people they've bonded with. So a lot of what I end up doing is talking to caregivers about how the horses are, they're missing a horse that was in their life when they were bought and sold or traded. Or like, what happened to my girl? There might have been a 16-year-old girl that the horse had bonded with, and the parents decided, well, she's going off to prep school, she can't have a horse anymore, we're going to sell it. And the horse is asking for that person.
Yeah.
So we're not quite there yet with understanding that this, at least we have to tell them what's happening. At least they have to know it wasn't your fault. You didn't know do anything wrong. They take it in.
Oh, yeah.
A failure.
One of the clients that I had, the woman bought a horse for her daughter, but the horse wanted the woman, not the daughter. And the horse was like, and he wouldn't behave for the daughter. It's like, well, that's not my person. And I had to explain to them, okay, you guys are mismatched. And once they figured that out, then they could work a little time where mom would be more connected. But that was the problem. It was not the right connection.
And there you go. Oh, good for you. So you tuned in. That's wonderful to hear.
Oh, well, but the thing about this is that it isn't seen as something we normally do. It's unnatural. And I love it because you're saying it is natural. And the more of us who begin to say that and allow that, we expand it and we bring it into our everyday lexicon, our language, the way we treat the animals. And it's less of a disposable of, well, the animal can't run, I can't have the animal anymore. And the animal's a personality, a being, and maybe one who's in that stable to calm everybody else. Maybe not the runner, but the one who keeps the peace.
Exactly.
And we have to see more of what they are bringing to the equation.
Because if there are more than one, they're part of a herd and they have a role in that herd.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've learned. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when one dies, they all mourn.
They
know that one is missing. And
So
these things are huge, huge, huge in our learning process as we begin to acknowledge there is more to an animal than a body and a type and a stereotype, I should say. So you got to keep doing what you're doing. Kansas City, does that call to you? Just go to sleep tonight, Kansas City.
You know, I'm so provincial. You're making me think of one of my favorite books and films, of course, was set in Kansas, I think, on a farm, yes.
It wasn't The Wizard of Oz, was it?
Of course.
I've got the
what
big
else
poster
would I be talking
wall.
About? And otherwise,
yeah.
I have been there. I've been there once. My memory is that it was really, really flat, and that you could see for miles down one road.
That's Western Kansas.
Ah.
Okay, so we got a few hills here. It's just as nice. Okay, it's really nice.
Okay.
There's flowers. There's horses. Okay, fine. All right. So I put the little sound there, all right? And no tornadoes. They will behave if you choose to come here, okay? We'll put them in the closet.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Hey, I was born here in Kansas, okay? I might have a little clout somehow, all right?
Ah, you were Kansas.
you betcha, land of Oz. Yeah,
never
I'm
met
not
anyone
Dorothy,
born.
But I have an Aunt Dorothy.
You do? I've never met anyone born in Kansas. But you're probably,
you
have a whole listening audience that they're all from mostly Kansas then, yeah?
Yeah, you betcha. I had a horse. His name was Sonny. And when I went to college, yes, he was given away and I was devastated. So there's a reason all of this stuff is happening, all right? So, I'm going to have to let you go, but we're going to talk again.
Okay, thank you. It's a delight.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay, you're listening right now. Rosalind Byrne, get on the web. Check out the website, check out the books, because there's a whole lot of wonderful, wonderful, empowering information there for you. And if you're looking at a way to connect with animals, this is just a very, very tip of the iceberg, okay? You probably can already do this in some way. Rosalind, thank you. Thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. And remember, we're going to reconnect with Rosalind, KCMO Talk Radio. All right. It won't be as in-depth because it's a shorter format, but probably some more information. And by then, maybe we will have an announcement about her coming to Kansas City. All right. I'll just put that out there. And thank you. I appreciate your listening. Appreciate your time. So many things are happening. Wonderful things to be a part of. And it's all right here as we recreate our reality and listen to horses and anything else that needs a voice. Till next time, see ya. Stay curious.